We're here at the Transition to a Bioeconomy Conference in St. Louis, and I'm talking with John Riley from MIT. John, just a few minutes ago, you talked a little bit about land use and the impact that biofuels has on that. What are some of the key points that you would want people to understand from your presentation?
Well, I think that biofuels could be a major, major supplier of fuel in the future. And in principle, it could be a low carbon source. But the indirect effects on land use is a large concern. It could lead to large emissions of greenhouse gases from converting forests. And unless we protect them, that is a big risk we play. I'm hopeful that if we could actually protect land use, land conversion, then we would get a lot of biofuels and not have this impact. But that is the big risk we face.
Yeah, I guess what we're looking at is a lot of times we have maybe pasture land that gets converted to row crop use, corn, soybeans, things like that. And then that pasture land is replaced by something else, maybe deforestation, those kind of issues.
Yeah, it's a trick. It's a wave effect. You know, it's not necessary if we're using cropland for biofuels, but then that expands cropland into some grazing land and then land conversion, that then forest conversion at some other margin. It could be not even in the same country. It could be in Brazil. So we produce a little less soybeans in the United States, a little more in Brazil, and that tipples across Brazil and causes some deforestation. So that's the indirect use that we worry about. Our modeling said, well, if you do put an increased hectare of biofuels, you don't get a one-for-one. You maybe only get a 30% of that is through land conversion, but still the carbon implications of that can be great. On the other hand, if we can expand biofuels onto grazing land or degraded land, you can actually lead to an increase in carbon on that land, because by adding more inputs, you harvest the top, but you leave more in the roots and other things, and that can actually build up the carbon in some land. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses. We need to get the economic incentives set so that we get the pluses and not the minuses.
Well, I'm sure there's no magic pill, there's no silver bullet to fix all this, but I guess what are some things that we can do?
Well, again, it's a very, very difficult issue because, I mean, in the end, we can get our domestic house in line in the U.S. and not allow deforestation, but then through international trade, that can end up affecting things in Brazil. And so the key is, I mean, and this is the problem with this issue, is global cooperation, and that's been the hard, hard thing to do. So we need to get, you know, global cooperation, both, you know, from, you know, the big greenhouse gas emitters like China, but also possible land use implications from countries in Brazil, Latin America, or in Africa, where we see some of the biomass potential.
Is that feasible? Do you think that we can get them on board?
Well, there are discussions. There's been a willingness to at least discuss the issue with Brazil and Indonesia. You know, we'll see where that goes. Unfortunately, well, one of the stories here is that, of course, farmers would like to participate in a greenhouse gas thing if they can get paid not to reduce. Brazil would like to participate if it can get paid not to reduce. Indonesia would like to participate if it get paid not to do it. Well, when you get the session there, is that someone has to pay. And so what a lot of these systems look like is some small part of the economy cap, the energy sector, and then they have to pay the rest of the economy to reduce, and that puts a lot of the burden on that sort of sector. So the question is whether if the U.S. has to pay for Brazil to cooperate and pay for Indonesia to cooperate, then it becomes a big bill for the U.S. consumers. So we have to have a willingness to do this. I mean, there's a willingness to do it if you get paid at some level.
And is there a cost-benefit analysis overall then?
Well, I mean, the cost-benefit analysis is the risk of climate change, and I think that's really growing ever as science becomes clear. The risks of that are really pretty strong. So at the global level, yes. The problem is we'd all like to think someone else would bear the cost of controlling it, and so the kind of aggregate cost-benefit analysis works in the favor of doing something, but when you kind of get down to who has to pay to do it, everyone would like to say, well, it's the other guy's job to pay, not mine. In the end, you know, there's distributional implications. Consumers end up paying for it all in the end because someone has to pay for these extra costs. So that's where it ends up. And so if we can get past that agreement and make it cost effective, then consumers pay a little bit less.
You find a format like this, a forum like what Farm Foundation has set up, useful?
Oh, yeah. I've worked with the Farm Foundation over the years, and I think they do a great job. I think bringing the science, some of the science and analysts together, along with the policy people, and then people working in the industry and farmers and corn growers, I mean, having that debate and discussion is just critical because, you know, I think one questioner remarked that we're way behind on this issue. People don't necessarily trust that the climate change issue is real. They're not sure what the issues are. And so unless we have this discussion like this and get every side of the view out on the table as frankly as possible, then we're not going to kind of get it. Because, you know, we live in a democracy, and people have to believe or at least feel they've been heard as we go forward. And so this public discourse is just absolutely essential.
John Riley from MIT here at the Transition to a Bioeconomy Conference here in St. Louis. John, thanks again.
Thank you.